Now, live from the Glass Enclosed Nerve Center, it's Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
Good morning. It's nice to have you with us for another edition of Ask the Governor on WTOP. NBC4's Julie Carey is joining us this morning as we have a conversation for the next hour with Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia. We want to hear from you this morning as well. The number to call is 877-336-1035. 877-336-1035. You can submit your question on Twitter using the hashtag AskThe. And, of course, you can follow along at WTOP.com, pose a question there, and join us, if you like, as well, on Facebook. You can watch the show on Facebook Live. Governor, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Mark and Debbie, and to your listeners. Thanks for having me back in the Nerve Center today. It's great to be back.
Mm-hmm. It's good to see you again. We are going to start discussing developments since our last visit. When you were here, we talked quite extensively about the then-upcoming white nationalist rally, the Unite the Right rally, which was held here in Washington a year after the tragic events in Charlottesville, where a counter-protester was killed. In D.C., the white nationalists were heavily outnumbered by counter-protesters. No violence here. But there was a price tag across Virginia and here in the district as well for law enforcement and security measures, state police in Virginia and others, to help get the white supremacists to D.C. using Metro. There was no return to Charlottesville for this one-year anniversary. As you take a look at, I know you discussed extensively with us about the preparations that were happening. Looking back on this now, what are your impressions about the day and lessons learned?
Well, Mark, it was a tremendous tragedy a year ago. And as you said, we just had the one-year anniversary and the anniversary of a group of white supremacists who came into a beautiful city spewing their hatred and bigotry. And I believe on your show last month, I assured Virginians that this we did not condone this type of behavior in Virginia, that we would not let it happen again. And we certainly had a presence both in Charlottesville and Northern Virginia. And I am very proud. Our Department of Emergency Management, our state police worked very hard. We had our National Guard on standby. So I think we gave Virginia the protection they needed, and we also sent the message to these people that they're not welcome in Virginia. So we were pleased with the outcome and that everybody was safe. And as you know, we lost three lives last year, and that's unacceptable, and we couldn't let that happen again.
Governor, there was also an impression, though, that white nationalists got special police treatment, almost had their own private security force the way it was handled that day. So I'm wondering how you feel about that impression. Was it worth the cost when you look at the appearance that gave a lot of people?
Well, I think maybe what you're referring to is that, you know, their transportation to Washington from a Virginia Metro station. That's obviously a decision that was made by the Metro Department. But, you know, Julie, these folks wreaked havoc last year in a beautiful city. We lost three lives, and I don't think you can put a value on lives. And so we did everything that we could. And again, I'm proud of the way everybody worked together. There was great collaboration and communication, and we had a safe weekend in Virginia, and that's what we were looking for.
Governor, do we have an idea of what the price tag was in terms of protecting these folks? And also, I guess the question is, from a taxpayer standpoint, yes, everybody wants a safe and a calm event when a rally like this is held. But I guess going forward, the question is, you know, how much money are taxpayers on the hook for every time a group like this wants to come out and hold a rally?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, we certainly take that into account. And the answer to one of your questions, we're still tallying up the total cost. But, you know, when you talk about the cost of these groups coming in, and we certainly we want to allow peaceful protests, but we don't condone violence. But, you know, if you look at the businesses in Charlottesville, for example, that were affected by this last year, I mean, business has been down over the last year, and they're still recovering. So, you know, I just want to make sure that Virginians know that we're there to protect them, and that we're here to protect businesses, and we're not going to condone that kind of behavior. And I was pleased with the presence that we had both in Charlottesville and Northern Virginia. And a tremendous amount of preparation went into last weekend. And again, I commend all those that were involved.
We'll pause here for traffic and weather. Continue with more of Ask the Governor on WTOP. We continue now with Ask the Governor on WTOP with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. We'll be getting to your phone calls in just a moment, 877-336-1035. That is 877-336-1035. Sarah calling in from Falls Church. We'll be getting to you in just a quick second. I want to tell folks if they have a question they want to tweet to the governor, use the hashtag AskThe on Twitter. And, of course, you can join us and submit questions on Facebook Live as well.
Want to talk about some new developments, Governor, in Virginia related to the battle over how state House district lines have been drawn. Earlier this summer, a federal judicial panel found that 11 state districts were unconstitutionally redrawn during the 2011 redistricting process, packing African-American voters into districts, effectively diluting their voting power in other districts that lean Republican. The federal court order gave state Republican leaders in the House until October 30th mm-hmm. of this year to redraw those districts. Friday, Republicans also face another deadline to say whether they will comply with that order. And while Republicans are appealing, they want a delay on that October deadline. So you've called a special session of the General Assembly August 30th to deal with this issue. You've talked about finding a bipartisan solution here on our show before. There are still a lot of balls in the air, we know. So why call a special session right now? Do you expect that Republicans are going to begin work on a new plan while they're still trying to defend the original one?
You know, Debbie, this is an opportunity for a great opportunity for Virginia voters and for to redraw these 11 districts that the court has found to be have found to be unconstitutional. You know, that notice was given to the General Assembly back in June with a deadline of October 30th. I have called a special session because we need to move forward with this. We need to have these districts redrawn by early in 2019. People will be running. We have the entire Senate and House up for reelection. So the opportunity has been given to the General Assembly to make these 11 districts constitutional. I want to make sure that we move forward. And we will have a map. When I say we, the Democratic caucus in the House of Delegates will have a map on August the 30th. And I would hope that the Republicans either sign on to that map or put their own map on the table so that we can work together and move forward in a bipartisan way. But in order to move forward, people have to be at the table, and that's why I've called the special session.
Sarah from Falls Church, Governor, is on line two with a redistricting question for you. Sarah, go ahead with your comment and question for the governor.
Thank you, Governor. And first, I want to thank you for moving forward with the special session and also for some of your previous work to promote bipartisanship. I'm disappointed, though, that the starting point seems to be a Democratic caucus map, because I think this provides the General Assembly with a great opportunity to test one of the potential models for an independent citizens commission to draw lines and ahead of what we hope will be some advocacy on behalf of a constitutional amendment in the next General Assembly session. Can you comment on that, please?
Absolutely, Sarah. And, you know, we are looking for a bipartisan redistricting map. And as you know, that will come up in 2021. But for now, the General Assembly has the opportunity to redraw these 11 maps. And to be at a starting place, we have to put maps on the table. And the Democrats will certainly do that. I hope that the Republicans will as well. Again, we have elections in 2019, and these maps need to be constitutional, and that's what I'm working toward.
Do you think that the October 30th date will hold? And if so, is there enough time, given all of the processes that must occur, for the state to come to a conclusion on this to meet the court's order?
Well, the Republicans have appealed, and I suspect they would like it to go to the Supreme Court, which will take a lot of time. But in the event that this appeal continues and the stay that they have also asked for is not granted, then maps will need to be in place by October the 30th. So that's why I feel that there's an urgency to this. We need to get moving, and that's why I called a special session on the 30th of August.
Governor, let's switch gears. Congress may have lowered federal taxes, but the states have not necessarily lowered their tax rates, and that's meaning a windfall of hundreds of millions of dollars in new revenue for Virginia. And there's a debate right now about how to use those funds. You have proposed making the earned income tax credit fully refundable.
Yes.
That would affect about 600,000 Virginia families who have incomes below $50,000. The surplus, we're told, is more than a half a billion dollars. Republicans like the idea of a tax cut, but they want it extended to more Virginians. Explain why you think your proposal is the best use of that money and not what the Republicans are saying.
Well, Mark, you're exactly right. And because of the changes at the federal level in the tax code, with the standard deduction rising, there is a great amount of revenue that will be coming into the Commonwealth of Virginia. And as you said, over a half a billion dollars. Now, if you look at the federal tax code, it really helps higher earners and large businesses. It really cuts short the individuals, especially those that are making less than $50,000 a year. So I have this plan so that we can right that imbalance, if you will, and to give our working families the benefit of having a refund for the earned income tax credit. So these are individuals that are making less than $50,000. Mm-hmm. We have the earned income tax credit in Virginia, but it's not refundable. So a lot of times they don't get what they're eligible to receive. So that's one part of it. And that will take about a half of the revenue that's coming in because of the change in the federal tax code. What we really have the opportunity to do, though, here is invest in Virginia. We have the opportunity to invest in infrastructure. Broadband, as you know, is something that is a high priority of mine. We want to make sure that all Virginians have access to broadband. We're going to invest this money in workforce development. I hear, excuse me, every day from businesses that if we can train their workforce, that businesses will grow in Virginia, and that businesses will be attracted to Virginia. So we have an opportunity to invest in workforce development. And then finally, in education, Mark, we are still way behind. Our teachers in Virginia are still being paid about $9,000 less than the national average. So this is an opportunity to use this revenue to invest in Virginia and to invest in working families. And so this is the plan that I've come up with.
We're going to return after traffic and weather with more of your questions for Governor Ralph Northam here on WTOP. The number to call in, 877-336-1035.
Traffic and weather on the 8th.
This is Ask the Governor on WTOP with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam this morning in the studio until 11 o'clock. Your phone calls are welcome at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. If you tweet your question, use the hashtag AskThe or join us live and submit questions on Facebook Live. NBC4's Julie Carey is joining us in the studio with a question for the governor.
Hey, Governor, you're probably aware that there is a different kind of campaign being launched this weekend. It's not about a candidate. It is a campaign to once again get the Virginia General Assembly to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment mm-hmm. that was approved by Congress way back in 1972. 38 states need to ratify it for this protection for women to become part of the Constitution.
Right.
And after Nevada and Illinois took action earlier this year, Virginia would become the 38th state and could put things over the top. Now, opponents argue that the deadline for ratification passed back in 1982. So challenges would be likely. But what's your sense about whether there is some new momentum for this in Virginia? And how big a priority is it going to be for you? How much political capital are you going to put into this fight this year?
Well, Julie, this is the right thing to do. And this is something that we have advocated for since I was in the Senate. You know, I came into the Senate in 2008, was on privileges and elections. This obviously, as you just mentioned, takes a constitutional amendment. This was put in every year. It gets passed and supported by Democrats, but then defeated, especially when it would go down to the House. So we'll keep trying. And, you know, I think people across the Commonwealth of Virginia are speaking, and especially women. And I think something that I have been so pleased to see, a couple of things I would mention. First of all, my cabinet this year is the first cabinet in the history of Virginia that has a majority of women. And that's something that I'm very proud of. We saw a number of women win elections in 2017 in Virginia. We flipped 15 seats, as most people remember. We have great candidates running this year for our congressional seats. So, you know, women are doing a lot of great things, and they should be recognized. And so I have always supported the Equal Rights Amendment, and if that's proposed this year, I'll support it again. We just have to look at the people that make up the House and the Senate to see if this constitutional amendment will pass in Virginia.
Governor, we have the results now of that investigation into allegations of abuse at the Shenandoah Valley Juvenile Center in Stanton, Virginia. There was a state probe initiated after we know several immigrant children said they were bound, beaten, and isolated in a solitary confinement facility there. Give us an idea of what the state investigation found here. It seems they were able to confirm that some kids were strapped down and that there were mesh bags placed over their heads, but the determination is that they were not abused. Can you explain that?
Well, obviously, when I heard about the accusations, the allegations that were made, it was very alarming and concerning to me, and that's why I did ask for the investigation. And our Secretary of Public Safety, with help from our Department of Juvenile Justice, went in and investigated, talked to the children that were at the facility. And while we offered advice, especially regarding the use of restraints, we didn't find any evidence of any abuse that was going on at this time. So again, that was very important to me. That doesn't address the allegations that were made a couple of years ago. That investigation is ongoing. There are protective orders that obviously we can't ask questions to some of the people that were involved in that. But the investigation that we did, we were comfortable that the children are being treated well.
So just to be clear, so those kids were not actually spoken to in this investigation, the ones that are alleging this abuse?
Correct. And they're no longer there. So we interviewed the children that are there presently. And as far as the restraints, and this is something I, having been a pediatric neurologist for 30 years, I have some experience. And restraints should always be looked at as being used for protection, but never for punishment. And that's something that we made clear to the facility and offered some recommendations.
Governor, let's go to a question on Twitter now. Philip is writing in. He says, Virginia joined more than 20 other states suing the FCC over the repeal of net neutrality consumer protections. He says, as a state with a vibrant tech and startup community that is reliant upon an open network, will Virginia be taking action either by executive order from the governor's office or through legislation in the General Assembly to protect consumers and small businesses online? He says Oregon, Washington State, New Jersey, New York, and others have taken action. Do you think Virginia will?
Well, it's certainly something that we're paying attention to, Mark, and I haven't made any plans to take executive action, but it's if the legislature wants to take that up, I think it's a discussion that we obviously need to have in Virginia, making sure that we do protect our consumers and small businesses. And we have session coming up in January, and this may be something that's on the table, and certainly if it is, it's something we'll discuss and then move forward with it.
Is it an issue that you're getting any pushback on from the tech community in Virginia?
You know, I haven't had a lot of discussion, but it's certainly something that we hear about. But there's so much going on right now. It hasn't been one of the more pressing issues that we've been dealing with.
We want to ask about one of those pressing issues that we hear a lot about around here, and it certainly has made headlines across the state, and that involves one of the two natural gas pipelines.
Yes.
We will get to that issue following traffic and weather. Stay with us. This is Ask the Governor on WTOP. This is Ask the Governor on WTOP, the August edition with Virginia Governor Ralph Northam. We'll be taking more of your phone calls at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can join us on Facebook Live, submit questions there, or tweet us a question with the hashtag Ask the Governor. A number of recent developments about two natural gas pipelines planned to cross through Virginia, construction underway. Last night, the State Water Quality Control Board opted to push the State Department of Environmental Quality to step up its enforcement regarding those pipelines. This action follows significant mud and sediment from pipeline construction that's washing out private residences, driveways, clogging ponds, streams, and rivers, and reports of dead fish in the water. Meantime, there is a court-ordered work stoppage and other regulatory issues holding up some of the construction work at this time along the long stretch of the pipeline. Looking at what Virginia can do, what action will you have your state environmental officials take to ensure that these projects are done correctly without environmental damage in Virginia?
Absolutely. And you know, this is something that we have talked about a lot, Mark, and I am very sensitive to the concerns across the Commonwealth of Virginia, not only with the environmental concerns, but also people's property rights. So we have been following this very, very closely. And you know, I have tried, and I will do it today as well, and assure Virginians that these pipelines will not move forward unless they're done environmentally safe and unless they're done abiding by the law. And so, as you just mentioned, the work has stopped on both pipelines. Federal permits are being reapplied for that will need to be granted. At the state level, we have the DEQ, and I work very closely with the DEQ. Regarding the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, we are looking at a stream-by-stream analysis, looking at erosion and sediment. This is the most rigorous oversight that has ever been done in a Virginia project. So,
but given the voice that the Water Quality Board gave to this issue last night, they seem to be saying that the state is not doing enough oversight and that there are issues that need to be addressed.
Well, I think if you know one looks at the recent Court of Appeals decision, they actually looked at what the DEQ was doing in Virginia and said that we were doing it by the book and was supportive of what we were doing. So again, we are very sensitive to that. We are paying very close attention. And I would just, again, reassure Virginians that compliance is going to be very important to us. If we see that there are erosion sediment situations at these streams, then the work will be shut down. And they have been in the past. So that's the way we'll move forward.
Because that's happening right now, and pipeline opponents have been rather vocal in their complaints. They say you're not living up to your campaign promise that you would make sure that this process has done right. Are there any assurances other than, you know, we're taking a rigorous look at this that you can offer to people whose property may be threatened or in others who are concerned about environmental damage?
Mark, I meet with my Secretary of Natural Resources almost on a daily basis regarding this very issue. And again, we are in contact with the DEQ almost on a daily basis. And they're working very hard. They're doing what's in the best interest of Virginia environmentally. And again, I just want to reassure Virginians that we're going to do this the right way if it moves forward. And if it's not done environmentally safe, then we'll stop it.
Do you foresee a point at which you might make some changes to the Water Control Board or at the Department of Environmental Quality as a result of problems that you're seeing now or problems that might develop in the future?
Well, there are two seats that will be available on our Water Control Board, and I have made the decision not to make any changes until this process is resolved. I don't think that would be fair to Virginian. Wouldn't be fair to the folks that have served and dedicated a lot of time to the Water Board. So we'll continue with the current board until this is all resolved.
Back to the phones we go. Line 4, Bud is holding on from Burke to speak with you. Bud, go ahead. You're on with the governor.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Bud.
As a native Virginian and a graduate of the Institute, I was wondering what your current thinking and current opinion is on removing the Confederate statues throughout the Commonwealth.
Bud, I appreciate you calling in, and I hope you're doing well. You know, I made the point back during the campaign, and I have continued to say that this is a local issue. We have allowed the localities to have, I think, very thorough discussions on how to deal with the statues and the monuments, and I will continue to support that. So, I don't know I did hear where you're calling from, but I think Richmond is a good example of having discussions and making recommendations, and I'm going to leave this up to the localities.
Governor, I'm curious about your reaction to what we saw in Chapel Hill with the statue being torn down just a couple of days ago. What did you think of the action that, you know, that group of people took?
Well, you know, Julie, the issue over the monuments has been very controversial. It's caused a lot of discussion. I don't ever, and I don't think anybody should condone people being unlawful, and certainly to come in and destroy or tear down a piece of public property is unlawful. So I hope that justice will be served on these individuals.
Governor, we have a question on Twitter from one of our listeners, and it reads like this. Chronic pain patients in Virginia who need pain medication are being adversely affected by the opioid problem. Is there anything that you can do about that?
Yes, I appreciate that question. And, Debbie, last year in Virginia, we lost 1,227 Virginians to opioid overdose. It's a problem as a physician and now as governor that I take seriously. Matter of fact, I had my third of five grand round lectures yesterday where I go to medical schools and teach students and residents and providers how to deal with both acute and chronic pain. To your caller's question, there are chronic pain conditions such as sickle cell anemia that we have in children where we have to control pain. And those are situations that are, I think, different from the average dealing or how we treat acute pain. And so we have to look at those children and adults as far as how we deal with that chronic pain. But at the end of the day, we as providers need to be very careful when we prescribe opioids. There are alternatives now, other medicines that are not addicting or as addicting. And we also need to support research and development, come up with new agents that are less addicting. So a lot is going on in the Commonwealth of Virginia. But at the end of the day, again, I want to reassure Virginians that we are there to help. And 1,227 deaths is something that we all should find is unacceptable.
Governor Ralph Northam is with us till 11 o'clock with this month's edition of Ask the Governor. If you have a question for Governor Northam, call us at 877-336-1035.
Back with Ask the Governor here on WTOP. We've got about 20 minutes left if you'd like to get your calls and questions in at 877-336-1035. Submit your question on Twitter using the hashtag AskThe, or you can pose a question on our website at WTOP.com. Don't forget, we're Facebook Living right here on WTOP. Join our Facebook page and watch the broadcast live.
Governor, we often hear politicians talk about bipartisanship, and it appears we actually have an example of it that you're involved in. Four governors, two Republicans, two Democrats, Louisiana, Kentucky, Oklahoma, and Virginia, joining forces to put their voices behind an effort for criminal justice reform, helping those who have paid their debt to society to regain a footing and become productive citizens. Read with interest a joint opinion piece published last week where you all wrote that the criminal justice reform will lead to an improved workforce participation rate, higher quality workforce, a higher quality of life, and safer communities. Allowing those leaving our prisons the dignity of work can and will prove to be one of the most powerful rehabilitation tools benefiting communities. The citizens of America deserve nothing less. It says, the four of you talk about efforts you've championed back home in each state to move the needle on this issue. But what more do you think that you can do as a group, and are other governors joining you?
It's a great question, Mark, and something that is a top priority of mine. And as you know, through bipartisan work and support this year, we increased the felony larceny from $200 to $500. You know, prior to doing that, if someone were to take a cell phone or a pair of sneakers, they would end up being charged with a felony and end up ruining their lives. And so we have a lot of work to do. You know, one of the points that we were just talking about during the break is the number of inmates that are in our prisons and penitentiaries because of opioid addiction, heroin abuse. And, you know, this is something that I am passionate about, and we need to make sure that we're preventing individuals from ever going down that path. And that's why I've been going around the state talking to providers. As far as recidivism, in other words, those that are released from our jails and prisons, we have the lowest rate in the country for that, something that we're very proud of. And the way we reinforce that and continue in that direction is through workforce development. And we have numerous programs where we're going into our jails and penitentiaries and whether it be learning how to work on HVACs, which I don't know about you, but our HVACs always going out on us, or whether, you know, in the building or automotive technicians, we're training our inmates, so that when they are finished serving their time, they are released and immediately employed. And that's just a great way for individuals to get back into society, to have a job where they can support themselves and their families, to get their voting rights restored, mm-hmm. To really make them, you know, human. Now, that's what we're trying to do. So a lot of good work is going on in Virginia in that area.
Where does the funding for those training programs come from? And are you seeing a reduction, for example, in the amount of money that you're having to spend on incarceration?
Absolutely. And the funding comes from, you know, from our general fund in Virginia. And as you know, we had a surplus this past year of over a half a billion dollars. We actually used the great majority of that to shore up our reserve fund this year. But now we have this half a billion dollars that's coming into Virginia as a result of the change in the federal tax code. And this is money that could be used for programs such as that. So it's all about, Mark, investing in Virginia families and investing in Virginia. And that's, we want to do that responsibly and as we use our taxpayers' money.
What can be done to get more governors as well as Congress involved in this?
Well, I think just to the awareness of it, and obviously incarceration is something that is a tremendous financial burden to all states in the country. So the less, you know, people that we have incarcerated, the drug courts that we have for those, again, going back to the opioid addiction that we're using now, all these things are working well. And rather than reinvent the wheel in each state, let's, you know, look at what's working in our neighboring states and take notes and put that to good use.
Governor, the National Institute of Mental Health says about half of all adolescents live with mental illness. A bill you signed into law last spring takes effect this year in Virginia schools, which are getting underway in the next couple of weeks, that would require a mental health curriculum for students in 9th and 10th grades, part of health or phys ed education courses. There's only one other state in this country that provides the same curriculum. That's mm-hmm. New York. Tell us about this curriculum and why you think it's so important.
Yes, and to your point, Debbie, we don't have to look very far to find someone that's affected with mental illness, and it's something that is more difficult to diagnose than, say, a broken arm or an ear infection. And so we do want to educate and make people aware across the Commonwealth of Virginia that it is a real problem. And a lot of these individuals with mental health concerns end up turning to the streets, end up on opioids. So anything that we can do raise that level of awareness is important. And so, you know, we know that we have that opportunity by looking at our curriculums that we use in our schools and making sure that especially our adolescents, but even children that are younger, are aware that these can be potential problems and really where to turn when either someone in your family or a friend is affected with mental illness.
What is this curriculum going to look like? What are these kids going to be learning about? And are the teachers properly trained now to teach this?
Great question. We're still working on the details of the curriculum. And to your point, yes, we do need to train our teachers because they're not they don't have that kind of training in their school. So it's very important as we move forward.
It is back to school season. We have several more questions on schools to come after the break, as well as some transportation issues. We can't escape those in this region, Governor. We'll get to those right after traffic and weather. 10:48. We are back with the final minutes of Ask the Governor on WTOP. Time for more phone calls. A couple of lines are lit up right now, and we'll be trying to get to a few more calls before we're done at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can tweet your question using the hashtag AskThe, or you can join us on Facebook Live and watch the program and certainly ask questions there as well. NBC4's Julie Carey is in the studio with us this morning. Did you want to discuss medical school at this point? Is that where you're headed?
Oh, there is one thing I think, Governor, you would have a unique perspective on. You probably heard last week that New York University was going to be offering free tuition to all of its medical students. The idea is to better diversify sure. that student body to take away the just crushing debt that 60% of med school students are leaving with. And consequently, it's keeping them from going into the lower paying fields of general practice and pediatrics. Mm. where you really need people to be. University of Virginia has an enormous endowment, estimated between $6 and $7 billion. Is that something you think UVA should start to think about doing, offering more free med school slots? And will you play a part in encouraging that kind of review?
Yeah, thank you for that question, Julian. That is certainly under my wheelhouse. And I commend New York for making that decision. I think we always have to ask, how are we going to pay for that? But to your point, I teach students and residents, and the average debt for a Virginia student once they complete medical school is $166,000. And there are out-of-state students that are in Virginia. I've heard $275,000, $300,000. And that's just a tremendous amount of debt to get out from under once you start practicing medicine. And so, as a general, I would say that we want to give everybody the opportunity that wants to go to medical school, not just those that can afford it. And so I am very open to looking at lowering the cost of education, not just for medical school, but for really any profession. Even, we have the G3 plan that we're getting ready to roll out, that get skilled, get a job, and give back, that will allow individuals to go to our community colleges without incurring debt. So the more we can do to help all students across the Commonwealth of Virginia afford a higher education, that's something that will be a priority of mine.
Governor, I want to get in a quick additional education question regarding the SOLs, which are coming out today, and schools across the Commonwealth are analyzing the results. Just taking a quick look at the information that we have received this hour, it looks like in aggregate, the results are little changed from last year, but down just slightly in each of the categories. Tell our listeners about the necessity of these tests, why they're so important, and are they really helping students, or could the time that often people criticize saying that is used to teach toward the test be better used in another way?
Yeah, Mark, we need a couple more hours to talk about SOLs, because that is a hot topic.
Standards of learning for folks who don't know what SOLs.
The standards of learning. And, I think it is a way of monitoring how students are progressing, also monitors how our teachers are doing. Accountability is certainly very, very important. But bottom line, and there were good intentions when the SOLs were designed, but we need to start working with our children, teaching them how to think creatively rather than how to take a standardized or a multiple choice test. So it's something that we are looking at those numbers. I think they're, from what I've seen so far, they're in the same ballpark that they were last year, not a large change. But, we have 3.5 more years during my term, and we've already, as you know, eliminated a couple of our SOLs, but it's something that I want to work on. And how do we monitor our children's and our teachers' progress, and really how we educate our children? How do we prepare them for 21st century jobs? There are just so many exciting careers out there. People, though, need a skill to have a job in this day and age. So we're really putting our heads together, rethinking how we educate our children. And as we move forward, are the SOLs something that we need to address and replace with a different accountability system?
While we're on the education topic, let's go to the phones and talk to Brig. Brig is calling in from Arlington. Hi, Brig. What's your question for the governor?
Hey, and good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Brig.
It's an honor to get a chance to speak with you. In Arlington, for about 5 years, I've been working on a new education approach to get kids excited, starting in kindergarten, about math and science, STEM, by connecting those subjects to sports through a fun art contest. And I've been working with a NASA astronaut named Larry DeLucas, and he'd like to help turn this into a national program. And I'm wondering if maybe you might consider doing a pilot of it in Virginia.
You know what, Brig? Thank you so much for the question, and thank you for your efforts. As we speak right now, my wife, who is a K-5 science teacher, we are both huge advocates of STEM. And as you know, I like to include arts as well. But she is traveling across Virginia right now when we're opening the doors to our students for the start of school, giving books to the schools, and really encouraging STEM education, especially STEM for our young ladies. And I think, to your point, the earlier that we can get to our children, high school, that's too late. We need to start talking about STEM at an early age. We're putting a lot lot of emphasis on early childhood education. So I would be very interested, and I know my wife Pam would be very interested in talking to you about this program. So please get in touch with us, or if you can leave us your information, we will get in touch with you to have further discussion. But thank you for looking at that.
Governor, on NBC4 last week, my colleague David Culver did a story talking to some folks along I-66 who are going to be displaced by that project. We already see a lot of that construction underway. Under a dozen homes that are going to be lost, but they're very concerned about the way they have been treated in trying to get a fair price for their home. They had expected to be able to move by the summer. It hasn't happened. In fact, Democratic delegate Mark Keem made the point that VDOT and its contractors are nickel and diming my constituents over the price of their fair market value homes that they're going to be taking. What's going to be done to make things right for these folks?
Yes, thank you, Julie, for asking that. I am very concerned about that as well. There are 10 homes because of the building of I-66 that are affected, and these families haven't been treated fairly. And we have made some changes the way that we approach this. And I, again, I've heard someone say that, oh, it's just 10 houses, but when it's your house, it's very important. And so we have reached out. We've made some changes in our staffing to work with these families. And also, one of the points you made that they would like to move forward by the end of this year, but there's some. I think some room to extend the process for these families. So I don't want them to feel rushed, and we want to make sure that they have the options of looking at other homes and find something that that they're content with. So it's something that I was very upset when I heard that, and we're making changes to so that we're taking care of these families.
Quickly, Governor, a Twitter question. Actually, a couple of questions have come in this morning regarding bottlenecks along 95. I know after you leave us today, you are heading down to the Fredericksburg area to talk about 95 expansion there to handle the bottleneck between Route 17 and Route 3 in the Fredericksburg area. This question is regarding bottlenecks in the Woodbridge area, and the caller wants to know, is there anything that can be done beyond what's happening with the express lanes and other 95 work to address that issue?
Absolutely, and I just met with our Secretary of Transportation, who's Shannon Valentine's doing a great job, but one of the topics that we discussed was the bottleneck around Occoquan, and I think that may be what you're referring to. It doesn't matter what time of day it is. If you're heading south, the bottleneck occurs. So we're looking at options that can address that. But, you know, the big picture, Mark, is that 95 is important to our economy. People have to get from point A to point B. I am going down to make an announcement in Fredericksburg in just a little while, but we're going to continue to work on that to expand 95 to make sure that there are other modes of transportation, trains, et cetera, that we want to be able to get people from point A to point B. Very, very important for our economy in Virginia.
You've got to be there quickly. I hope you're taking a helicopter.
No, we'll be driving down 95, we'll get to experience Occoquan on our way down.
Good luck, Governor.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thanks for coming in, Governor.
Thanks
we appreciate
for having
it.
Us.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Take care.
It.